You know you're kind of a big deal, right?
Bitch, yes I do. That's because I consider fisting first base. But you do know you're kind of a big deal too.
Well, that's because I respect the process. Duh.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
This is Kind of a Big Deal podcast with Terry Miller and Douglas Parks.
Yo, people. Hello, people, and welcome to It's Kind of a Big Deal podcast. I'm your host, Doug Parks, and I'm here with
Terry Miller.
And of course, Benny Puss is with us, and Fiona's chilling on the bed. Today, we're joined by two other amazing people, my girl Michelle and her son Daniel.
Hey.
Now, Michelle's been on the podcast before a few times, and we love having her, and we would like to possibly talk to her about being a more permanent fixture in this podcast, but we'll discuss that later.
So last time we had Michelle on the podcast before last, we had discussed about the current crisis. Well, it's not a crisis, but the current issue that's going on in our country right now.
Yeah, like I would call it a crisis because honestly, like all lives matter. I get that. But right now, today, because all lives matter, we're out of balance. We don't have balance. All lives matter, but there's some lives that aren't getting the attention that they're deserving and need, even though they're asking for it. You know what I mean? We're not seeing it. And that's Black lives. So Black lives matter. Black lives matter is more important right now because we need to get that part up to balance with the rest of it. So there really is equality, true equality. The definition of quality is all the same. And we don't have that right now. So we got to get that shit back. So right now we are in Black Lives Matters mode. And that's where we're heading with this.
So I think that I seen something on Twitter, and I know usually you don't see too many smart things on Twitter, but it said that all lives cannot matter until all Black lives matter.
Yeah.
I think that's perfect way to sum up what Doug just said. So,
and I mean, we hit on two things at the same time because we're now also hitting on police brutality and violence and how that's not equal. You know, they're not doing what they're supposed to do. So there's two major issues going on right now. But the one most important one being the Black Lives Matters, at least to me.
What are your thoughts on this, Michelle and Daniel?
Do you want to go first, Mom, or what?
I struggle when I read a lot of people and hear a lot of people saying, you know, people are racist for saying Black Lives Matter. I've lost Facebook friends and people I've known for years because, you know, they say that that's racist. I think we need to first realize that first and foremost, Black Lives Matter actually is a group. And people have used that group name as a hashtag. So it was a movement and not specifically a battle cry or something other than that. It literally is a functioning group.
Yeah, you guys have something that I want.
I'm unaware of that. I'm sorry?
You guys have something that we want.
Well, I mean, hey. And I think it's disheartening. And I saw something very amusing. A young lady was with a group of people, and she did it to try to give an example of why people should understand that Black Lives Matter. So a house down the street was on fire, and she was telling her friend, hey, we gotta go and try to help. And her friend was like, well, what about my house? My house matters. My house is important. And she's like, of course your house is important. Important but you're not in danger. Somebody's actually in danger.
Oh my God.
And, you know, it's, that's a very simplistic example, but that kind of covers it. You know, everybody matters. And, you know, like you said,
whose house is
if everyone's claiming to be not racist and all lives matter and we're all one race and things of that nature, then everybody's got to be okay. Every rule's got to go and be enacted evenly for everyone.
Yeah.
What? And we can't honestly say that that's happening. So even if you don't like Black Lives Matter, that's that name, that group, that's irrelevant. It's still a problem because not everybody's getting treated the same way.
I think I can agree with that. That's a good way to put it and phrase it.
Yeah.
So, Michelle had made a comment on the episode before last that as a Black mother, she has to raise her son, which is biracial, with different topics of discussion that if she were white, she would not have to do. So would you like to touch a little bit on that and talk a little bit about that and exactly what you meant by that?
Okay. What I meant by that is that, and hearing this from also, I've grown up with this, and hearing this also from, you know, my uncles and other family members that were police officers, for a lot of instances, police officers, you know, are profiling people of color, be them Black, white, or, you know, Black, Latino, whatever, people of color. And even Black officers are profiling because that is one of the things that they are taught. And also based on neighborhoods and what have you, that's what they're taught to do. So when you are stopped by a police officer, most mothers are trying to tell their sons, you need to be in a position of, you know, non-threatening, not verbal abusive, ultimate respect. And one of my friends says, hey, you know, I'm Caucasian. I teach my child that too. Yes, but sometimes even the questions you might ask all are become threatening. Even if you're like, hey, simply, why am I being stopped? What are these things that you're doing? These are your rights to ask. But in a lot of situations, you carrying out those basic rights cause, in stressful situations, people not to act the way that they were trained or the way that they should. So I teach Daniel, you know, it's yes, sir, yes, ma'am, whatever you say, you need to make sure you live for the next day. And I'll do my best to get you out of whatever you might get into, or if the situation does not go accordingly, then that's my job to help you, you know, the end result that you need is just to be respectful. Your job is to do what you got to do to make sure that you come home. So that's, you know, there's no questioning, there's no arguing, there's no nothing. It's yes, sir, yes, ma'am, what can I do? You see, you know, no sudden movements, no anything. You be, some people want to say the word subservient, that's not it, but you be as docile as possible. And just get the mindset that you got to go home. That's it.
Yeah. So, Daniel, what are your feelings on your mother having to teach you these types of things, and what your thoughts are if and when you have children of your own?
When I have children of my own, I'm definitely going to have to teach them the same thing. And I found when my mom told me those things, I found it very important.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say after that.
I think it's going to be hard for him to come up with a how to expound on that, because he hasn't known anything different. I mean, my mother, as when he was 3 or 4 years old, tried to teach him before I even had an opportunity to say something. So he hasn't known anything different.
Yeah, and I was hoping that that's where it had gone to, because that's the point, is that Daniel doesn't know any different. You know, being told to treat a situation like that when you are black is completely different than telling a white person to treat a situation like that, because you're not subject to a difference that is seen from, like, right there.
Do you all feel equal?
And I can give you a somewhat good example. I was in the car with my husband, and Daniel was not with us at this time, but we were stopped by the police. And immediately, you know, it all kicked in my head. You know, I made sure my hands are not in my lap. I put my hands on the dashboard. You know, I had the window before, really quickly, the window, put the window down automatically, hands on the dashboard. And I was immediately into the yes, sir, no, sir, because that's how you're supposed to be. And my husband was hollering and screaming and questioning that cop and wanting to know, what for? What are you talking about? What? It doesn't make sense. All sorts of stuff. And I'm trying to tell him, you have got to be quiet. And him being a Caucasian man, he thought, okay, that's the normal thing. What are you talking about? I'm like, this is not what we do. And it went a little bit left. And I'm trying to tell the officer, you know, something is wrong with him. He's not okay. And, you know, yes, sir, whatever you say, because I'm like, you have to stop this. And he's like, no, it's my right to ask. I'm like, no, stop this and we can go and you can be mad about it later.
So do
and,
you think,
you know, he had a very difficult time understanding that, because in his mindset, that's what we all should do. And I'm like, it doesn't work for me. For people of color, you don't do that. Because where it went even a little bit left for him, it would have been way worse.
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you think when he married a black girl that it changed for him to almost as if, like, the black standard was also applied to him? Or do you think that elevated you and you just weren't aware of it? You know what I mean?
Elevated me? I don't know what you mean by that.
Like, because it's so unequal between the black and the white thing, what do you think it is for interracial couples? I mean, in some ways it's hard, because I know a lot of black people who have said they don't want their sons dating white women. Because they don't want mixed babies. So, I mean, the racism also goes along with both sides, just because of
racism. Racism goes both ways.
Yeah.
My mother grew up in, you know, Jim Crow South. And the thought of me married to a white man was just, you know, that was just disgraceful, mortified.
Yeah.
And, you know, she, thankfully, as time went on, changed her opinion. But part of it was not truly racism for her. Part of it was because she was fearful about how difficult it would be.
Yeah.
For society and for us, because we have such differences. So that was a large part for her. And I think that, you know, my friends that are in interracial relationships, you know, a couple of us had conversations and have had varying conversations with our spouses about what's going on. And some people are like, hey, I get it. You know, as much as I can get it, I get it based on my children. And I, you know, I don't want my children to be treated a certain way. And some just don't get it. And, you know, what does that say? Hey, that maybe not a great thing. But when you are in an interracial relationship, I do believe for the person that is not accustomed to these types of behaviors, it's difficult. Because you're stuck with saying, hey, I don't see situations this way. Why do other people see situations this way?
Yeah, I know when I was in elementary school, there was a friend of mine who is now a friend of mine. She was a mixed girl, and we used to pick on her and call her Oreo cookie and things like that. Because when I was a kid, my parents raised me to be racist. And when I got into middle school and started like thinking for myself and realizing that I don't agree with them and they're not right, I got out of that shit, you know, but it was taught to me and I didn't like it. I didn't accept it. But when I was younger in elementary school, I didn't understand it so much more. So I actually joined in on making fun of this girl because that's what all the other kids were doing. And later on in life, when I grew up and realized that I was wrong, I went to her and apologized and we're friends today, you know. But I legitimately felt bad for the way I treated her, and I had no right doing it. But I think, I wonder sometimes if it's harder on mixed kids than it is black or white. You know what I mean? It's almost like their own. So what do you think of that, Daniel?
What do I think of that situation? Or
did you ever experience it? What do I think of?
You're being an interracial kid. How do you feel?
It feels kind of weird. Then, is it okay if I bring up Papa, Mom?
Sure.
You can say anything you want.
It's kind of weird, huh?
You can say anything.
You can say anything you want.
Oh, for real? Oh, cool. Okay. It was kind of weird how he says that I'm only like black in America, and then he says I'm Polish, but that doesn't make any sense because Polish doesn't have a skin color. That's weird. I don't think I have a particular other instance, but it's just weird. It's kind of weird having him say that.
Yeah.
I.
Do you feel, besides your father, that anyone has made you feel differently being, you know, an interracial kid? Like in school or anything like that?
Everton, sometimes. Like a little bit, but like, not like too much. Maybe some dumb jokes here and there, but not like overall. Not like, oh, God, oh, here's that kid. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
So, let's talk a little bit about that DoorDash thing that you guys were doing.
Okay, sure.
What exactly was that?
Well, we DoorDash as a family.
We do. It's special. It's
really very special.
It's a special kind of disaster.
It is.
You go around family's houses?
My husband is not mechanically or electronically inclined. So I have to run the app and the phone. And yeah. So that's special. And Daniel's usually in the back seat, sometimes with the headset, sometimes not. And they sort of alternate who runs and gets the food or who delivers the food to the door. And I take care of any app problems or communication with the customers or one of the favorite things DoorDash has. Locations that don't actually exist listed and people order from them. So I then have to,
crazy.
Yeah, I then have to contact DoorDash and still get half of the base pay for us. Make them fill out a form for that. So that's the DoorDash thing. Pretty much any day my husband's off, we DoorDash as a family.
Pretty much.
Your story just gave me an idea. I mean, we've got all these cultural differences. So
we're having a hard time hearing you, Douglas.
I don't know.
Douglas.
That's not doing nothing. I'm further away from it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So I had this idea because of the story you just told. And you've got everybody who has different ethnical backgrounds. If you got 10 different families from 10 different regions of the earth and they made a meal that come from their hometown or wherever, and randomly everybody draws a name out of those 10 people, and you take the meals from that house and just randomly deliver it to another house so they get to try a meal that came from that other country. And they don't know what they're getting. Whatever they get, they just eat it and try it and then tell people what they think about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, food brings community.
Yeah. Like, I love food. I like to try different kinds of things, but I don't like getting Chinese from a Chinese store. I want a real Chinese person to make my food because it would be authentic.
Well, it makes a difference.
I don't think that's racist. I think it's racist for people to try to pass off Chinese food. It's really just Americanized crap. That's racist. You know, give me some real cuisine. I want African food. You know, with their herbs and their seasonings and the way they make it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want Polish. I want German. Hell yeah. I want Russian. I want it authentic.
Well, I can make you some authentic Polish food. That's not a problem.
Yes, you can, Mom. Yes, you can.
I learned a lot of Polish.
Dad loves that.
Yeah. But food is community, and food is a way you can bring people together, definitely.
Yeah, it's just an idea from the story you were just telling, the DoorDash thing.
Oh yeah,
you have many stories.
But that would be funny when you take your food to somebody's house, and when you get home, there's food there for you. And you get to open it up, and there's a surprise, and there could be a video from the family, you know. There could be like recipes put in there. There could be all kinds of stuff put in there, you know?
Well, we kind of do something like that. I belong to a group on Facebook, and we don't do the full out meal, but they call it blessings. We'll send, you know, like our favorite snacks or desserts and maybe Amazon things or whatever, so that, you know, and we're from everywhere across the United States. So, you know, you might get, I got like fantastic toffee from Oregon, and, you know, this woman's favorite thing, or a woman even sent me a Cincinnati chili, you know, her favorite food, but in a way that can be shipped, you know, without any difficulty.
Oh, yeah.
So Doug and I quit smoking. We've been just...
almost 2 weeks now. Monday will be 2 weeks.
Monday will be 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so almost 2 weeks now. That's how good we're doing because we're losing track of time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a pretty big accomplishment for myself. I mean, I've tried this probably 3 or 4 times.
Is this the longest you went when you quit?
Well, it's huge.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is the longest. Thank you. It is the longest that I've went when I've quit, but it also feels different this time too.
Yeah.
Like my head's a lot clearer and I'm, you know what I mean? I made it past the 3 days before. But I also don't think I was mature enough at that time when I was trying to quit to be able to deal with the the anxious part of it or overworked part of it without turning back to that. How's it been for you?
No, it's a huge thing to be able to do that. Yeah. And a friend of ours quit and he found an app that tracks like how much money he would have saved every day. And, you know, it's to see that was a motivation for him. And also just know, like, go another 2 weeks, those, I forget the actual medical term, but the little fibers inside your lungs start to get back to normal capacity and working once you've gone just under 30 days. So you'll notice your lung functions acting over the cough and stuff. You'll notice your lung functions will be back to what it was prior to, you know, all of the tobacco.
I found it kind of interesting because one of the times that I attempted to quit, I had used Chantix, and if you've probably seen the commercial, it's the Chantix is the quit smoking drug that is really big on the market from Big Pharma to try to help you quit smoking. So one of the side effects of that was nightmares.
Oh no.
Like,
oh no.
Nightmares that like jolt you awake and you're like sweating. So the one night I actually had one, and it was pretty bad. And then the next night I had one, but it wasn't as bad. And then they stopped. So I don't know if it's like withdrawing from nicotine, like because your brain had that nicotine. And then when you're withdrawing from it, it kind of messes with your brain for a little while until it like works itself out. But I found that kind of interesting that this time I had them and that time I had had them when I was on the Chantix. See, so I thought that was cool. But with the Chantix, like once you are on that, you become dependent on that. And then supposedly once you're done, you don't crave that nicotine anymore because it shut off the nicotine receptors in your brain.
I don't like drugs for nothing. I'd rather, I've always just quit cold turkey and been fine. The only reason I went back this time is because my ex smoked a lot and I was tired of smelling tobacco and cigarettes. Like if I'm with somebody that smokes, I have to smoke if they're smoking because it stinks so bad if I don't. I don't want to kiss them. I don't want to touch them. I don't want to be in a car with them, you know? So like with him wanting to quit, I was happy about that. Because I would rather
quit. It's good that you two of you are doing it together.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It always is better to do it
with you. Badass.
So let's do this race thing together. Yeah. I think we should no longer call ourselves black and white. I think we should be whack or blight.
What is your race? I'm whack.
Wacky whack. Don't look back. No, I personally love you guys. And
we love you.
It has
you
nothing
too.
To do with your color. Like, it's your personality and everything you are. I love you guys, you know? And I really don't see color. To me, it's like you're either an asshole or you're cool as shit, you know?
Yeah, and that's the same thing with me. I don't see the color of your skin or the difference in you. I'm judging people on their character, how they act as a person.
Now, I've seen white people in a grocery store, and when there's a black person around, they act differently. They're like on edge or they're watching, you know, but they don't do that with white people. I've actually seen that in stores, you know. But like when I'm in a store, I don't give a shit who's around me. I'm fine. You know, I can tell if there's a bad energy around me and I just get away from them. But honestly, most of the time, that's older white people because I have a problem with older white people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just well, because of my parents and the abuse.
It is amazing to me. And I'll give you this example. A gentleman my husband and I went to school with came out of one of those programs for offenders, and they educate them for free that Maryland had a while back. So he was in our school because the state of Maryland put him in there. And, you know, he was also speaking, trying to tell people about crime and things of that nature. And that was part of the thing he had to do. And he, one of the things that I found so telling is he would always mention that he would work in a crew, but he would work with Caucasian men. And some of the people were surprised, and they were asking him, why, you know, explain yourself. And why did you think that you had to specify that? He's like, because I'm trying to let you know that we went into stores and different places. I was the person that walked in, and everyone would follow me or would be fearful of me.
Yeah.
And my team would walk in behind me and steal everything because nobody paid them any attention.
Yeah. So they used the racism to their benefit.
So I think, you know, that's just telling that people's perceptions, you know, they were waiting for him to steal. And all along, you know, everybody's in there stealing while their attention is taken someplace else.
Yeah.
And in my life, and this is messed up, and I probably shouldn't say it like this, but I'm going to say it like this. In my life, I have...
There's been heartache.
Been more scared of the white people than I have of black people or anybody that has or of brown or anything. I don't know what it is, but like I lived in North York. All the black people were real sweet, real kind, you know, always there to try to help you. The white people were like insane. Like the blacks get such stigma, but I think they're the sweetest people and the kindest people. And white people are just fucking nuts.
Yeah, I think we've all had experiences where it goes both ways. Because, you know, my mother would always say, you know, she lived in Baltimore City for 40 years and nothing ever happened to her. And she came to Harford County, and then that's when, you know, she was robbed. So she would marvel at that. And, you know, in the next breath, you know, she was a Baltimore City teacher. After that, you know, then she was really just concerned. And I had to remind her, we've all had experiences both ways. You know, she had her telephone stolen by her students while she was in school. So I'm like, you can't judge it because it can happen to you any kind of way.
Yeah, there's good and bad. I
had the same experience. I worked in the worst neighborhood in Baltimore City. I mean, right there where the Freddie Graves stuff, I worked right in there. And I never, ever had fear. And I should have. But I never had any fear because part of it, one of the old ladies there said something to me that rang true. You need to have a friend in every socioeconomic group.
You did tell me that. Okay.
And yeah, I've told Daniel that you need to have that. So I made sure that I was a nice person. You know, my mother was fearful for me being there. A black woman fearful of me being in a black neighborhood. But I made sure the moment I hopped off the bus, I spoke to everyone. I engaged everyone. You know, I read all those management books. You need to have at least one fact about everybody. So on my way walking to the front door of where I worked,
I spoke to everybody, knew, hey, how's your kid? Oh, congratulations on this, that, or the other. And on the way back, the same way. So when shit broke out, and I was there when shit broke out, those people respected me enough because I respected them. They made sure to get me the hell out of Dodge. So it works both ways.
Yeah.
You know, there are places and times and situations that we all can have it happen to us. But what's got to happen is you got to be honest. If you feel that way, you got to be honest and say that and be honest. And I think this happening now has given a lot of people an opportunity to have an honest conversation. You know, some of them haven't been great conversations, but I think the underlying thing is people want people to be honest. People want people to listen so they can say that they've been heard. And people want people to learn. You feel a certain way, okay, but if you're willing to sit and honestly take in the information, honestly find other sources, do a little research on your own, then I think a lot of people would feel differently. If you do all those things, even with you're being taught that way or you having a poor experience, if you take the time to say, you know what, regardless of my experience, I'm gonna sit here and hear what you have to say. I'm gonna sit here and read something about it and then formulate my opinion. Maybe your opinion only changes a teeny bit, but still that teeny bit is progress. The little victories, that's progress. Maybe it'll change a lot, who knows? But the willingness to sit, listen, be heard, all of that, that's still progress.
Well, with social media today and podcasts, it can get out. You know, there's so much stuff that's coming out now because of podcasts. You can't keep people quiet. And it's going to be in your face. So either these older people and the people who have been taught by these older people to be racist and deal with racism, they're the ones that need to get their shit together, you know? And I guess eventually they'll fade out. So maybe racism will fade out. I would love for that, because to me, this is a petty, stupid issue to be dealing with. And the fact that you all have to deal with this on a daily, everyday basis, I fucking think it's ignorant and sucks for y'all, you know? I don't believe anybody should have to deal with shit like that.
And you're right in a lot of ways, but I think that the more, for me at least, and I've had tell people, you know, Black Lives Matter group doesn't speak for everyone, or this person doesn't speak for all Black people. So I'm going to say, for me personally, I would feel better or say that there's progress has been made if people are honest. If people are willing to, you know, have these tough conversations. I mean, I've had some horrific conversations and found, you know, some hurtful things and allowed some people to say some hurtful things, because I think this
you give me an address, I got a baseball bat in the trunk of my car, I'll go take care of that for you.
Well, you know, there are moments, who knows, we might have to go there. But people, the mask that people wear, the political correctness, the, all of that is beginning to fade away because of this. And that's a good and a bad sword, but people need to be able to say what they want to say.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think you run into more problems when you don't let people be heard. But the hardest part after you let that shit out is the willingness to learn, the willingness to listen. And that's where I think the biggest problem is, people are not willing to listen. I mean, we started off talking about the, you know, people want to say all lives matter and, you know, you're racist for saying Black Lives Matter or what have you. That's because people aren't trying to listen.
Yeah.
And people are getting stuck on semantics versus listening to the problem.
Well, I think,
you know, I had a friend who literally cried because somebody posted out, I need to let my friends know how many times I've been stopped as a Black man. And when she read the responses, and quickly, in less than a half an hour, there was like 600 people that, you know, they weren't evil. They were not negative responses, but they were like, hey, I was 10, this, that, the other. And they started just listening and listing out all of these times. And she was in amazement. And, you know, some of us were wondering, hey, why are you in amazement? Okay, she wasn't ready to hear that. She was stuck on the semantics. But when she got to see something tangible,
yeah,
and people weren't hollering and screaming, but she could literally see people listing out, you know, in 20 years, I've got stopped 6 times or all of those things. It was, had more of an impact.
Did you listen to my podcast that I put on Facebook today? Tea Time with Paul Douglas.
No, today was not a good day for me to be real good.
I did not hear the podcast. I'm sorry.
I don't know. It's on Facebook. You can check it out whenever you want. But I kind of had, like, I was sitting on the front porch by myself tonight, and I wanted to say the stuff that's on there, you know? And I felt like I needed to say it, so I did. And it's kind of my first podcast on Tea Time with Paul Douglas, which is supposed to be a YouTube tutorial, but I'm going to do podcast along with it, you know? But, I hope a lot of positive energy and a lot of positive and a lot of love comes out of all this. And I hope a lot of healing happens. I really do. But I just have a feeling it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, I believe that. I honestly believe it's going to get worse before it gets better. I hate to say that. I hate to be negative, you know.
I mean, our history dictates.
Tell us we have to go ahead and spread love and whatever for every COVID, for every hate thing. You got to spread some love. So, you know, I'm trying to go that route, but I think you're going to have a greater problem because so many people through media, through personal beliefs, through whatever, have a feeling that the situation is just one way, just one thing happened. You know, I had a friend basically say to me, it's just a bad cop. It's just this. It's not just. This is just another thing. And I mean, come on, what a perfect storm. You got people locked up with COVID, dealing with that, and then having this, you know, I do believe, like I said before, that if this happened any other time, this would not have been as bad as it is right now.
Yeah.
But if you've got people that are willing and able to pay people and get into situations where people are mentally in trouble, financially in trouble, and pay them to be part of confusion, and all anyone sees is these people being part of confusion, how hard is it going to be?
So I know that this topic can get a little boggy and weigh you down a little bit. There's a lot going on. So what is some positive things that we can bring up and talk about and share with the listeners?
Well, I think that if one of the things that would be great to do, or most people should still be doing during this time, is some self-care. And one of the things that Daniel and I are trying to do is take those moments and, you know, use those homemade products that our friends make and take that moment for ourselves, you know, the scrubs, the baths, that kind of thing. read the things that we want to read or take a lot of a better care of our health.
Yeah, we do commercials on our podcast for Midnight Alchemy.
That stuff is amazing.
Yeah, we actually we'll promote friends who are have their businesses and stuff. We don't mind, you know. And Midnight Alchemy is one of the companies that you're just talking about that we sponsor, do commercials for, and try to get out there, you know. Because Karen's my cousin, the owner. We love her, and she is the creator of this company, and we love everything about it. So.
Yeah, and I think that it's important during these times to do shit that you like. Bring shit into your life that brings you joy.
Yeah.
I mean, like today, a few days ago, I found out a woman I used to work with started a company making bougie popcorn. So today we made sure we got some of that.
Bougie
and
popcorn.
It was delicious.
Do tell.
I would like some more information about the bougie yeah. popcorn, please.
It's called like Get Popped, and
also that's the name.
Yeah, and she literally mixes small batches, and most of them are mixed with like Hennessy and Cavassier and Jack and things of that nature. So it's boozed up popcorn.
Oh, I thought you were saying bougie.
Well, it is. If you see how she packages it, and it's got the little, you know, bougie sea salt stuff on it.
I so think we got it like a salted caramel one.
Yeah. And it had the, you know, it was too cutesy, but it was amazing.
Wow. Really, I'm going to have to try this out.
Yeah, is there a contact email or a Facebook group you can list? Her name?
It's actually, she's on Instagram, and on Instagram it's Let's Get Popped.
Oh.
All right, so go over to at Let's Get Popped and support another local person with a awesome side hustle.
Yeah, we'll get the advertisement or the link put up on our podcast Facebook page.
Yeah, most definitely. Share. And not the singer.
Terry and I have been doing some healthy stuff lately. We quit smoking 2 weeks ago. We've drastically changed our diets. Except for today. Tonight we're cheating. And we're having chicken and pizza. But like, I've been feeling so good all week. You know, physically anyway. Mentally, I've been tired and drained, but I think that's a lot of the weather and just everything that's going on.
Yeah, and I think the heat is definitely draining. And like Doug was saying about, you know, changing the lifestyle and stuff like that. And I mean, even he's mentioned before about possibly even going for a vegan lifestyle. So, I mean,
that's a major lifestyle change.
Do it. You should totally do it. I gave up meat in November. I'm not completely vegan yet, but I'm almost there. And I personally did it because I was having terrible, you know, stomach issues and felt ick. And, you know, they tested me to see maybe I had a gluten problem and they couldn't figure out why I was feeling so bad. So I just gave up meat, and literally 2 weeks later, you know, felt so much better. Wasn't having those issues. Really, you know, I think everything changed. Lost more, a little more weight, and just felt completely better. And Daniel started a couple weeks ago not eating meat. And a couple people in our book club are vegan or non-meat eaters. So it's, even in that little community, you know, we're passing recipes and products you should try. So there's a lot of support if that's an avenue y'all want to go down.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's definitely something to consider and look into and dive into more. So real quick, before we start sounding off here, I wanted to share our blurb that we run on the podcast for Midnight Alchemy real quick, just so that you have a little bit more background information and why we support Midnight Alchemy. We support Midnight Alchemy because Karen is an awesome person, is a friend of Daniel and Michelle's from the book club that she had started, and is also Doug's cousin. So that's how I've become to know her and everything else. So Midnight Alchemy is all natural products that make you feel better, using nothing but non-GMO, gluten-free, and non-animal tested products. I personally have used a pain relieving balm, and it is amazeballs. It starts working after about 10 minutes and makes you feel so much better. We have also tried the Thieves Oil, the exfoliating face masks, and Earthly Realms therapeutic body and room mist. All Midnight Alchemy products are hand created by Karen Jones, one awesome human being that cares about making you feel better. For more information and to order, follow Midnight Alchemy on Facebook at facebook.com/midnightalchemy423. You can also go over to the Etsy page and search Midnight Alchemy LLC to order all of Karen's products. Midnight Alchemy, the power of healing naturally. So that's our little bit of a our little ad that we usually run for Midnight Alchemy to give you a little bit of information if you want to go over and check that out. Next time that we talk to Michelle and Daniel, we'll get a little bit more information on those products that they're trying out and the side hustles that they're checking out. Side hustles are amazing and so interesting what people are coming up with and how creative they're getting. With the whole quarantine, that kind of like made all the creative juices flow and everything like that.
Yeah, TikToks have gotten
definitely
big time.
So until next time, stay true, hug someone, and always be
a big deal. Bye-bye now.
We love you. Love you all. Follow Kind of a Big Deal on Facebook at Kindcast or fb.me/kindcast. You can also follow the podcast Instagram and Twitter at kind_cast. Check out our podcast anchor page at anchor.fm/kindofabigdeal. Follow Terry Miller on Instagram and Twitter at terrymiller91. And on TikTok at Terry Clay Miller Jr. Follow Doug Parks on TikTok at DouglasParks7. XOXO, stay true. This has been a production of Claywater Productions. Listen to our other podcasts, Off the Beaten Path, Tackled, Kind of a Big Deal, Carpool Podcast, and Tea Time with Paul Douglas. You can listen to all of our podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you enjoy listening to podcasts. Bye!